Hello and welcome to episode number five.
It's six.
Of Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas. I work on the framework team of Android on UI toolkit stuff.
I'm Tor Norby. I work on the tools.
And with us today is Dr. Dan Sandler. I couldn't resist. From the system UI team.
You stole it because I was going to start off by saying my name is Romain Guy. I work on
Go ahead.
Just for a little throwback. We'll edit all this out. This is terrible.
You're just
going to
make him cry. They're going to miss him. All right. Cut. We'll just do it over from the beginning. Oh, no. Go. Who are you? Why are you here?
My name is Dan Sandler. I'm a tech lead on the Android system UI team. Our slogan is everything you see on the screen that's not an app. That's us.
Okay.
Which gives us a framework for how to talk about it. That's your your slogan is everything you see on the screen. You're in another layer, a whole other layer of the abstraction.
Okay, so system UI is just a subset of my team then.
That's
okay,
right.
Great.
Everything's
right.
A subset of your team.
All right.
It all comes down to math.
So it's basically the UI of the operating system. Is that how you would classify it?
Yeah, it's when you sit down on one of these Android devices, it's delightful, you use it, but what are you using, right? You're either using an app, you're using some affordance on the screen to get between apps, to navigate, to find out system status, to discover what other apps are trying to tell you. That's all System UI. System UI provides the glue that allows you to move from one app to another. We provide the home button, we provide the status bar, notifications, app launcher, recents, the lock screen, key guard, all of that infrastructure. Those things that you see and touch that are not Gmail or Flappy Bird, that's system UI.
And you use the word affordance, which is a really good stuffy word I hear tossed around a lot. Mm-hmm. And when people use that word, what do they actually mean?
I don't know what they actually mean. What I mean when I use it is something you can see and grab and do something with. I think the convention, the classical example is the affordance on the scissors is the handle. You can think of the affordance as being the blade too, but you might end up in
It's something that gives you a clue that you can interact with it, right?
That's right. Something you can see and touch.
So it's guns don't kill people. It's the affordance of the guns that kills it. So it's the price.
I didn't know
really.
This was a political podcast. I'm
trying to take it in a new direction. We're trying to attract new listeners. And clearly, you have to take a strong, ridiculous stand in order to do that.
Android Developers Backstage, now on AM radio.
All right, caller on line two, what you got for me? All right. So that's what System UI does. And so you have the people on your team are basically doing all the various components of that. You, as far as I know, are heavily involved in the notifications subset of that.
It's a big part of System UI because it's one of the pieces of System UI that also influences the framework. So we all have honorary citizenship in the Android framework team as well. I'm sure much to your chagrin. We're at all those meetings too. Most of what we do in System UI though is sort of the last step. It's almost like building an app in the sense that we're building UI surface area using the same Android frameworks and APIs that apps do to be able to put UI and put features in front of the user. But occasionally those things actually result in new API that other apps can use. Notifications is probably the biggest one of those. It's a huge API surface. It's something that is, widely been credited as something Android got right early on. We continue to add things to it. And so I've had particular focus on that to make sure that, I don't screw it up.
Yeah, I like the idea that we got it right early on and therefore we're going to add to it until we change that.
That's right.
Go until it doesn't work anymore.
That's right. Yeah. Peter Principle written into APIs.
Are there any particular challenges when you do system UI where, you're not an app, so are you running in privileged mode or anything like that where you have to be extra careful, to not incur jank or anything like that?
Thank you for feeding me my answers. Yes, so system UI, everything on the system, has a responsibility to be robust and performant, but if we crash, you lose your home button. If we jank, then you feel it every time you switch between apps. Or every time you unlock your phone, right? The problems that we cause unintentionally through bugs and misfeatures and things like that, those apply across the whole system. We can mess up your experience wholesale. So the burden is on us to make sure that those things are robust and hit that 16 millisecond deadline every time. And what that forces us to do in many cases is sort of play defensively against ourselves, right? In the development process, you find a bug, you want to scratch the record, throw a stack trace, send up sirens so that you can figure out what went wrong. But in Android, when an Android device is running for real and it's in your pocket and people are expecting to be able to call you on this device, we do what we can to sweep that stuff under the rug. So you'll notice occasionally, oh wait, I thought my status bar disappeared, and then it came back. When the system UI crashes, the system generally doesn't complain to you about it, doesn't pop up a dialogue saying, oh, system UI crashed, please report some feedback. It instead says, we better bring this back as quickly as possible.
Is that a recent change? Because, you know, I Googled system UI mm-hmm. before this interview to sort of see, you know, what are the kinds of things you covered.
He does his research. He's great.
He is the fresh air of developing.
And anyway, a lot of the hits were like, system UI crashed. You know, like this is pop-up that mm-hmm. people get saying, system UI crashed. You know, what do I do now? So it sounds like we're not doing that anymore. We're not telling them. We're just sort of like restarting it quietly.
There are different situations. Some situations where you know, the crash is something that we want to surface to the user. The details, I'll be honest, I would have to look them up. Perhaps I could use a search engine of some kind to figure out which situations generate the dialogues and which don't. For the most part, we try to keep the device running at all costs.
Or is that something that would get customized when partners take it, or you know, independent people take the platform and then customize it for their own nefarious means?
Nefarious.
I think. Did I say nefarious?
No,
I meant affordance.
So I'm glad you brought that up. So one of the other wrinkles, you said, are there any challenges in what I do? And of course, the answer is no. Otherwise, you know, why would I be here? One of the challenges in what we do is that we don't actually ship to a lot of users. We work very hard to build this sort of this experience that we're really proud of. And then we say, okay, take this and make an experience that, you know, you can sell in your market, or that is on brand with your device and your carrier and so forth. So we want to essentially create like the tallest diving board off of which, you know, other people can, you know, jump off and do their tricks.
You're talking about for carrier customization. If they want to have their own look and feel, they can.
That's right. So one of the ways that we do this technically, if you're sitting down and you're customizing a ROM, when you build Android from source, it's very easy to create a bunch of overlay resources that essentially swap out bits of system Chrome just at an asset level to be able to create your own visual style, reskin the buttons, adjust colors and things like that. And this is what OEMs do customizations of the device theme and the system UI sort of across the device.
And you've done that deliberately so that for them to update to later versions of Android would be easier than if they'd gone and had to actually modify code and make patches in different places?
You know, that's the idea, and it's not enough. It's one of my jobs is to try to find out from OEMs what ways in which we can make those customizations easier so that future versions of Android just require, you know, tweaking some resources as opposed to manually going through a massive patch bomb and trying to reconcile those diffs. Where that becomes really challenging is when an OEM skin sort of deviates radically from the AOSP, the Android Open Source sort of stock look and feel, right? When they have a completely different behavior for something like quick settings, or they add additional you know, buttons and behaviors to the navigation bar. That's something that we don't have a plug-in architecture for that exactly. Potentially because, or I should say partially because we don't know all of those customizations. We haven't had a sort of a summit to say, you know, hey, what kinds of things would you like to build? Let's create a clean sort of extension point for that. I think we're moving in that direction. I think that, you know, we've had some good motion on AOSP patches recently. I hope that listeners feel that way as well. We've been a little more responsive to looking at those things, particularly with an eye to this would make it easier to apply future updated versions of the Android source to an existing OEM tree.
So you mentioned quick settings. That's something you worked on, right?
That's right.
I remember some early placeholder graphics that was sort of amusing in there.
Yes, that's right. I have a particular screenshot of Android Police framed at home. future site of quick settings.
I remember that. So is that, that's part of the system UI. Is that something that carriers can customize, or is that something that you think in the future you might be open to developers putting stuff on? Because personally, I would love to have a place to toggle my tethering mm-hmm. on that list, and sure. B, for phones, I would love to toggle auto-rotate. I can only do it on Nexus 7, but I often would love to switch that on my phone.
Now we're getting into forward-looking statements. What I will say is that this is a definitely an active part of the system that we're looking at improving. It's still pretty new, right? The quick settings as we know it has only been, you know, in a couple of major versions of Android.
So do you sort of lock it down to prevent that from sort of becoming full of junk before you think about it?
Yeah, that's essentially the idea. We go through a pretty, you know, robust process here of deciding what tiles to put in that space and which ones to avoid. Because if you put in 30, it's impossible to use, right? I mean, you have to get a pilot's license to operate that kind of UI. And so we try to really constrain it to the things that the user, we expect you're going to need access to, you know, daily, multiple times a day. You don't want to have to go into settings. You want some quick access to it. We're not hitting all of those, right? We're trying to sort of hit the center of that distribution. But
plus ads. Are we also looking at putting ads there? Because it'd be a sweet spot for them. Pull down setting, and there's an ad for the logo.
No, just a 5-second pre-roll, and then you get to your settings.
There you go. Guys, this is terrible. We're going to have to cut all this out. This podcast is going to be 5 minutes long.
Specifically, that was a joke, okay? Yes. Just make sure.
I like how you're looking at the camera. Like, these people are going to see.
Is it even worse? He's not even looking at the camera. He's looking at the monitor of the camera.
Oh, is that
the camera, which is filming something that will actually never be posted online.
That's right.
So I wanted to roll us back. We'll just do a Wayne's World thing and say, okay, so you were saying, and I had heard this before, that notifications were sort of a distinguishing feature of the platform from early on. And I joined much later, so I don't actually know the history. I was, at that time, I think I was still using one of those like wall phones where the receiver is separate from the mouthpiece, and then calling the exchange operator to dial me in. So I was not familiar with the platform.
Did you speak in that old-timey voice, too? I know.
I did. So why did we choose to do this? Like, was this just sort of a brilliant insight in the middle of the night by somebody, or was there like a driven goal around this, and how did it develop into the feature that it was?
I wasn't here at the very beginning either. The folklore, I've been told, around a warm crackling campfire, is that a lot of this stems from experience with the hip top, right? The device that was launched as a sidekick that was at, developed at Danger, which was one of Andy's previous joints. They were really ahead of the game in recognizing that this device could be that a device that you carried around with you could be an always-on communication device. Now, of course, you know, I mean, cell phones, there was already a thing. At about that same time, I was carrying around a Palm 7, getting my emails on over the Mobitex pager network and feeling very, very cool. The idea that this device would, its primary purpose would be to get messages from other people, I think was a real insight that they had at Danger. And so they spent a ton of time building a sort of the rudiments of a notification system. I think that what we have in Android, and you can go back and look at some of the pre-1.0 screenshots of that small, entirely keyboard-based Android UI, the pre-1.0 stuff, and it's still got notifications even at that point. Notifications with custom views and little icons in a status bar and things like that. I think that there has always been this idea that even before people were using these devices, there was an insight that this is going to be the reason that people use these devices over time. That this is going to be the nerve center of communication with other people. And in order to do that architecturally, you have to make a choice. How are these apps going to get your attention, right? If you believe in a world that's, you know, separated into apps that perform, you know, discrete functions that you can understand, this one's for messaging, that one's for, you know, video, this one's for calls and so forth. How are they going to get your attention? They could just throw an activity up. Like, you just pop up in front of whatever you're doing. Hey, I see that you were doing email, but somebody just sent you a text message. And so that pops up. Arguably, that's what you have on the desktop. You know, you can almost hear, if you think back, you can hear that AOL Instant Messenger noise and see a little, you know, blue chromed window pop up in front of your Internet Explorer. Like, everybody's had that experience. And I think that notifications was intentionally a desire to come up with some sort of way to say, all right, I see that you all want to get the user's attention now. You've all got this on, always on network connection. You're very important. Please get in line over here. Take a number in an orderly fashion. Let the user get to you in the user's time. So by funneling all of these interruptions through sort of one conduit, we can, you know, unify them, put them in one place, throttle them if necessary, and give the user control over when to deal with those. You know, I've met people who use notifications very, very differently. Some people are very OCD about it, and they need to keep that notification area clean. Some people kind of don't know what it's there for, and they think that there's just sort of this decorative feature at the top of Android.
That would be my
icons.
Mother.
That would be your mom.
Yeah.
Hi, Chet's mom. And
well, we joked about, you know, putting pre-roll ads in the quick settings, but, you know, for a while, that was sort of a common area for ads to make themselves known.
Right, and so that's against that's against our terms of service in the Play Store to actually use the notification system for something totally unrelated to your app. Advertising features of your app is, you know, it's part of the relationship that the user already has with the app. Technically, it's on brand there, and we allow it, but we also give the users tools to combat that. This was one of the new features, and so in the time that I've been babysitting notifications, we've had a couple of major feature bumps. In Jelly Bean, we introduced rich expanded notifications and notification blocking by the user. And then in Jelly Bean MR2, we introduced notification listeners, which enable a whole constellation of other devices where you could potentially send your notifications to other devices and other viewing services.
Right. Why don't you explain notification blocking? Because I know from experience that my kids don't know what this is, because they will install these games, and these games will put notifications up, and they're complaining to me that, oh, this is so annoying, but they don't actually realize what they can do. So why don't you explain that?
Yeah. So let's say that you install some app, you think it's going to be cool, you know, Java, Posse, Crush, Saga, whatever, and suddenly it starts popping notifications, you know, that you really feel like are not necessary for this app.
Well, a lot of games, like I say, please come back. You got
that's right,
five
and that's
new
part
credits.
Of their engagement. And yeah. Games are, I am all for, you know, attract mode in an arcade. Come play me. This is you know, this right. is the way that games work. Using this attention stream, this thing I was saying earlier, people sometimes use this as like, these are the things that I need to do, and I'm not going to take it out of my notifications list until I've really dealt with it. And you know, Jelly Bean added actions so you can actually take some action from that space, and it's really a very powerful place to get stuff done. Putting your games ads in there doesn't make a lot of friends, and so we added the beginnings of a facility in Jelly Bean to give the user a little bit of that control back. You can long press any notification and find out which app sent it, which first of all is great for discovering. If you see a notification, you're really like, I don't know what this is. You know, I don't know right. what AutoAwesome is. And you long press on it, oh, that's coming from Google Plus. Oh, right. I don't know where this, you know, scummy ad is coming from. Oh, it's coming from, you know,
BatteryExtender.com.
That's right, exactly.
Fictional
that's
name. Right. Hope that is not a coincidence.
Is that trademark? Is that domain registered? Can we get that?
We should try.
Get a TLD.
Actually, I did have a good a name idea. I mean, if you get into the spammy business and just sort of piss off all your friends, you could go with a whole like words with ex friends. I'm gonna sort of trademark that.
Go get that. Can we get that? Do we have? We'll put that in the show notes.
All right.
And so you can long press and get the app info, which is step one, knowing where this app is, and you can go and uninstall it. But we went a step further and said, you know what, we want to give users the control to be able to use an application, particularly if, you know, it takes an update and then starts posting notifications where it wasn't before. You know, a bad rating on Market is a good way to respond to that. Go to the Play Store and uninstall it. Leave a comment. But we also want to give the users more control, and so you can actually just turn off the notifications feature for that package.
And that's perfect, because there are times when I installed a game recently, one of the, you know, top games in Play, mm-hmm. And it was doing this spam thing, and mm-hmm. I'm like, the game is good, but mm-hmm. I just don't need to hear from it, and so that's I turn right. off notifications, but I certainly don't want to give it a bad review.
This is the struggle that we have. Is this right. is a great app, but you've made some bad choices. Well, so this is why we want to give more control to the user.
Right.
Interestingly, I don't know. The first implementation of this block under the hood, the Notification Manager service, which is the nerve center within Android that handles all of the notification requests from the apps and ferrets them out to the status bar and now to notification listeners, just kept the list. Just kept the list in an XML file somewhere in the secure part of the partition of all the packages that the user had chosen to block. Listeners may have seen something called App Ops appear in AOSP recently. This is a great new facility for us to be able to do a little bit of internal accounting and control over system services that don't rise to the level of permission. Right, you shouldn't need a permission to do notifications. Notifications is a part of Android that you should be free to use.
Free speech.
There we go. That's right. Free text-to-speech. That's a different feature. You should be able to use that too. So we don't want to wrap that around a permission, but we do want to provide a way to account for it internally. And so when App Ops came around, when Diane put that in, I was one of her early customers to say, oh, I can use that for the block system, because App Ops allows us internally within the system to turn that spigot on and off. You'll see that starting to crop up in things like location settings. If you go and look at location settings now, you can see things that have recently used location. And my understanding is that that's why we build App Ops, is to be able to look at things using a particular operation and do internal accounting, or where necessary, you know, expose it to the user.
So the mechanism for actually disabling or these notifications, the spammy notifications, is like a long press on the notification, right?
That's our favorite gesture. That's right, long press. Everybody knows what a long press
is. Yeah, exactly.
Actually, no, sorry. So our favorite gesture is the mystery meat menu button. You never know what you're going to get when you press it. But second only to that is
the long press, which is great once you know about it, but I didn't even know that we had this feature until you said, oh, you can long press on that spammy notification. So if you happen to know Dan Sandler personally, then you will find out I do use this feature. But it brings up an interesting point.
Or if you listen to the Android Developers Backstage podcast.
Exactly. This is the other way that we're attracting listeners. Political stances that don't make sense and information about features that you wouldn't otherwise know about. But it brings up an interesting point about UX in general, which is there's always this tension about simplicity in the UI, so you're not barraging the user with information about what's going on in the experience, and how the heck do they find the thing that they want, right? How would they know this feature unless they accidentally long pressed and got a dialog pop up that said, hey, would you like to disable this notification in the future?
That's right, and I mean, this is the craft of, you know, human computer interface is you know, fraught with these sorts of situations, right? And there are plenty of tools in the literature for dealing with things like this, like progressive disclosure. I don't want to assault you, but I want to give you an obvious way, an affordance, if you will, for accessing. Are you going to start keeping score, affordance scores, right next to the sharp good well, question tally?
Actually, you mentioned affordance in the same sentence with classic literature, and so I'm wondering what Jane Austen was doing with exactly. affordance in her novels. Right. I'm going to go check that out.
Little Buttons.
That's actually a Dickens novel, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is. No, that's a great clip target. Anyway,
I really can't keep up.
No, I can't either. It's demonstrable. So progressive disclosure is the way that we typically deal with that kind of thing. And, you know, in quick settings, this is why, we had to make some tough choices about what to expose in quick settings, but boy, the big settings button is right there. So there's more under the hood. So specifically around, you know, discoverability of these sort of notification blocking features, I hear that feedback. Loud and clear. This is not a feature for everyone. This is a feature for, it's definitely a power user feature. Anything long press now, so I joked earlier about our favorite gestures. Long press, if you see that in modern Android UI, this is a definitely, you know, there be dragons, right? This is a power user feature. Anything that is hidden under long press should either be accessible through some other means or inessential to the fundamental operation of the app.
You know, so in action bars, you can long press on the icons and it'll give you a tooltip if the app provided it. So you can see what it was. Mm-hmm. But I've sometimes wanted to know, what are those icons on the right in the system UI? Mm-hmm. What is the difference between blue and white?
We talked about this already. Those are decorations. Okay, so all right. So let's talk about the visual changes in Android 4.4 KitKat. That's what we called it. Historically, Android has used color in a mysterious way in the status bar. I forget when we introduced the color. I think it was Gingerbread that we started showing sometimes the RSSI, the received signal strength indicator, in green or white based on whether the groundhog sees his shadow. Or at least that's all that most users could really make out of it. If you went and you looked online or you knew some framework engineer personally, you could learn that, oh, what this really means is that the device has a stable connection to MCS, which is the open socket by which all of the tickles and pings and notifications and so forth that come from Google arrive. It is an indicator of the health of your network connection.
It's also, isn't it faster for graphics performance? Because green is, of course, only one channel of the RGB.
That's true.
Color, as opposed to white, you have to put all the pixels.
You know, you joke, but when we developed the Nexus One, you may recall that was our first OLED device. And we suddenly had to deal with the varying power constraints, power draws of different colors. One of the things that we didn't mention at the top of the how long did we go? 5 hours? 5.5 hours? At the top of the podcast is, for a while, SystemUI was also in charge of the clock app, the beloved, delightful little clock app. And that was one of the first things that I worked on was the desk clock, the new desk clock conversion from alarm clock that had all the docking features for Nexus One and the Motorola Droid. And in that, if you put that into its own screensaver mode. Oh, screensavers, yes, Daydream is the system mode. We keep coming back to the same kinds of features over and over again. In original desk clock, you know, it went into screensaver mode and it used green because green used the least power and was going to burn the OLED in the least back long, long ago. So no, so the green icons were, they conveyed some information to some people. That information was kind of accurate, kind of told you what you wanted to know. But more often than not, if people noticed it at all, it was a source of confusion. We sort of lived with this for a long time. We switched from green to blue. You only live once, I know. We made the tough decision in KitKat to remove the color from them entirely. And this is partially inspired by this issue of confusion. People don't know what this means, but also partially inspired by another feature that we're really committed to for KitKat, which is the translucent system UI. You've seen this now in the Nexus 5 launcher experience, and you're starting to see other apps on the Play Store taking advantage of this as well. A great way to, if you have either a wallpaper themed activity or you've got something else, you know, beautiful and delightful going on in the background of your window, you can push that to every corner of the device display, including the navigation bar, including the status bar. And then we draw the system UI over it with a little bit of a gradient of darkness to protect the system UI icons. But you can still see the wallpaper all the way through it, right?
And it's all part of the growing transparency of the platform.
Is there a list
he's
for bad
punch,
puns?
He's the punch list.
I thought that was a giant pile of... Okay. So we discovered very quickly that none of the colors that we had in the status bar looked good against every possible background. So we went with white. And in fact, we've already played with some of the intensity and color of the status bar. For a while now, we've actually been dimming the icons that are posted on the notification side as well as the system status side in the status bar so that they're not so blinding against a black background. What you'll notice now if you look closely when you transition from a normal themed activity to a translucent decor themed activity, there's a beautiful transition that goes on to convert the status bar from opaque black to its blended form, and the icons will actually increase in intensity to full power. The alpha goes up to 11 and you see them at full intensity, but that only really works if they're white. That only really flies if they're white icons. So, but we recognized that this was still useful information for some people, right? And so we talked a little earlier about, you know, power users are users. Power users are some of our best users. We're power users. We want to build tools that make ourselves happy. So those colors live on in Quick Settings. Hopefully you've noticed this now in KitKat. If you pull down the Quick Settings panel, you will see the signal strength indicators for Wi-Fi and mobile data. In their normal state, where everything is happy, they are white because we are essentially standardizing on white is nominal, white is good.
I'm fact checking right now while you're talking.
That's right. Well, you're in airplane mode anyway, so that we don't all end up with radiation on the line for the podcast. But if you put that in a refrigerator or a plastic a Mylar bag or something and simulate the channel fading that exists in my basement, for example, you will see those icons turn to orange. So we
because we'd already used green, we'd already used blue.
That's right. We're just moving around the color wheel. Okay. Somebody somewhere has a color theory book. They're just sort of flipping through it idly. No, we're trying to essentially use color to signify this is an exceptional condition. So you see that in the status bar. We're trying really hard not to use it in the status bar, again, because it doesn't work well over many backgrounds. But if the battery gets really low, the battery goes to orange and to red to indicate those error conditions. So you'll see that in quick settings as well for the signals.
All right. I don't know where to go from there.
I'm sorry if that was too short an answer to your question.
Oh, I had something about 17 paragraphs ago. When mm-hmm. we were talking about the UX stuff, I just wanted to point out like one of the ways of discoverability that you'll see demonstrated in system UI is indicators of what will happen when you do certain actions. So one of the things I find interesting in the notification panel is, okay, you swipe to remove stuff, which again, if you don't happen to swipe for the first time, it's not obvious to you, unless you've gotten used to swipe in other applications and it's become a general paradigm.
Yeah, we haven't yet figured out how to get all Android users to watch Google I/O talks so that they learn about these features.
It'll happen this year, I'm sure of it. But if you press the icon at the top that mm-hmm. shows this sort of staggered thing, and you notice, well, when I press this, everything goes away and does basically swipes to the right, it's giving that visual indicator to the user of, this is how we get rid of notifications automatically, and then maybe it indicates to them that's a way that you can manage.
You could try to do that yourself. That's right. So that kind of, teach the user to fish UI is the kind of thing that is a tremendously productive outgrowth of our team's interaction. We're an engineering team on System UI, but we are in constant, continuous sometimes uncomfortable contact with the Android user experience team.
Can you can you sort of describe the process, you know, by which System UI evolves? Sort of, you know, how does something go from an idea to, you know, shipping on a device?
Imagine the ball of lint that comes out of your dryer.
I thought you were going to say
that
cat.
Is the. Imagine a cat, a perfectly spherical cat. It's a long process. You know, we're still an engineering-inspired company here, so a lot of our ideas come from an engineer who's like, I've got a crazy thing I can build, let's see what we can do with that. But we also have just as crazy and just as inventive a UX team who are busily whipping through reams and reams of plotter paper, generating giant, you know, billboard-sized printouts of wireframes and sketches of UIs that we could build tomorrow, UIs that maybe we could build next year, UIs that none of us can build without, you know, holographic screens. Over time, we sort of whittle those ideas, sort of whip them around into kind of a meringue of something that we can actually start to call a feature, start to think about, you know, get a PM on board. PMs do the yeoman's work of actually taking a feature and making sure that it's on all the lists of all the things that we're going to ship so that it doesn't get lost.
PM being a project manager.
Thank you, yes, yes, not after.
Prime Minister.
Actually, PM, it's a confusing term in all companies I've been at. There's project manager, there's program manager, there's product manager, and they tend to mean very different things. And whenever somebody says PM, you never actually know what they're talking about.
Right, so our ministers of parliament are the ones that really take these features and shepherd them and make sure they don't die on the vine, right?
Right.
And then between UX and engineering, we go back and forth continuously taking prototypes that UX builds, and they build in a bunch of different tools. Sometimes it's just static mockups. Sometimes they are building, you know, interactive prototypes, and sometimes actually building Android code. I can't remember exactly when it was, but I was so delighted. I got a Java patch in Garrett from Christian Robertson, who is one of our head visual designers on the Android UX team and the designer of the Roboto
typeface. Mr. Roboto, yes.
Exactly. Oh, we all owe him thanks. There was one day that he sent me a patch for it. You know, here's how I'd really like for the glow behind the navigation buttons to look. I'd like for it to kind of swell in this way and have this opacity, and here's a patch. That's awesome. That feels great. I was like, okay, plus two, LGTM, I guess. Looks good to me. That's how we talk to each other around here at Google. It's hard to wander onto campus because everything is sort of encoded into this sort of minimal bitrate sort of pseudo speech. So my apologies for my Google pigeon that I'm uttering here. But
so how often do you are these designs and prototypes, how often do they meet this problem where you get to the, well, that's beautiful, but, you know, the thing we talked about earlier where, hey, I can't really affect battery life, I can't really introduce jank, I can't really put in these awesome high, you know, assets with lots and lots of memory requirements because we're trying to be small and fast.
That's right. This is what gets me coming to work every day. The problems that we have here are like diplomacy, the art of the possible, right? We have something that we want to build. It's way out there. I'm making hand gestures here. I apologize for the
No, it actually is out there.
Oh, it is? Okay, okay. We're here. Can we plot some point that is kind of vaguely on the line from here to where we want to get to that is going to create a better experience? Without sacrificing any of these other things. And that's why sometimes, you know, it feels like we're making maddeningly slow progress, even to us. But we have all these other considerations to deal with to make sure that this is something that is robust and performant, and, you know, we don't drop frames and so forth. That art of the possible is that's exciting. That's the nut, is to take something that is designed and to reduce it to something that we can build with high quality. It's very challenging. Anybody who's ever, you know, worked on, you know, reducing UX wireframes and visual designs to actual working reliable code knows what I'm talking about, and we do that every day with the burden that this is a device that people are carrying around in their pockets, and their bosses and their spouses and their babysitters and what have you have to be able to call them on these devices, or increasingly just IM them and reliably, you know, get to people through this, you know, mechanism. You know, we all on Android have the burden of making sure that works every time. Adding delight to that in a way that doesn't break all those other constraints is the challenge and the fun of it.
There's also there's a higher requirement for runtime performance, I think, because that UI is so pervasive in the system. Like if you mess up the performance and have occasional jank in your app, that's too bad. Maybe your users won't be as happy with that app, but it doesn't destroy their experience with the phone overall. And if they want that particular application for specific situations, they will use it anyway. But if the system UI is janky all over the place, and every time you run an application, every time you use a launcher, every time you log in, every time you pull down the notification panel, things are crawling, then they are going to not like their entire phone.
You say that as if you just thought of it, and if not, for example, as if there hadn't been somebody on your team who sent me a bug saying, hey Dan, you've got to take those in and out indicators out of the RSSIs in the status bar because they're causing invalidates and redraws multiple times a second at all times, no matter what app is running.
Who sent you that? Would that be me?
It was you or somebody who.
But this reports you. But this is exactly why we care deeply about this, and this is why we use all the tools that we talk about in these I/O talks that people aren't watching. These tools get created for us to use internally, and we expose them externally because other people should use them as well. The overdraw tools and the GPU performance and the frame rate and all that stuff, we use them to fix problems like this, because if we don't fix it at the core platform level, then people with the apps aren't even going to care.
They're definitely tools that we build for ourselves. That's why I exhorted Romain to add a deuter anomaly mode to the overdraw view, because I'm red, green, colorblind, and I can't tell the difference between the different variations on red and green. I'm like, oh, this looks terrible. He's like, no, that's actually really good. Like, I couldn't tell. So now we have the blue version as well. The specific anecdote that we're sort of dancing around here for the benefit of those listening is another thing that we removed in KitKat from the status bar is the little up-down arrows that indicate when traffic is arriving at and departing your device. And this is another one of those UI features that we really struggle with, because it provides a very reassuring sense of, oh, I know that something is happening, I know that something is going on. And I am loath to remove those comforts from the device because they're psychologically important and useful in diagnosing problems. On the other hand, the way that we had implemented it was causing invalidate, draw, relayout, multiple times a second. We started to fix it. We started to fix the layout problems. That was the way that the RSSI is built. It can expand and contract based on how many radios you have and whether you're in airplane mode and so forth. That's the signal strength indicators.
Okay.
I thought
talking about wrist problems.
I promised that I wouldn't get derailed by you. Apparently, I promised nobody.
That's what I'm here for.
That's what you're here for. That's right. Color commentary. We fixed the layout problems, but it was still causing draw calls and distracting the GPU and essentially
in another process too, which is part of the problem.
In another window, and sapping performance away from everything because the status bar is always there. Always visible on screen, except in certain situations when it's not. But most of the time, it's always there. So we were forced to do the right thing by Android, particularly by lower end hardware. It's easy.
Was this part of the Project Svelte effort that went into KitKat?
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. We went across all of the system trying to replace giant assets with runtime draw calls if the CPU cost was not too great. Reduce and reuse other bits of memory, more aggressively purge things, and this kind of thing. It's these unnecessary draws that we worked really hard to remove from the system so that the Android would work better on lower spec, lower memory devices. And in some cases, that process actually generated other wins as well. One of the things that has always bugged me about Android is that I felt like we could never quite get the battery level right, because the battery level in the status bar is implemented by an array of drawables, right? A bunch of just ping files that indicate, oh, this is the one that we use between, it's a level drawable situation. So we have a stack of them, use this one for 0 to 4%, use this one for 4 to 8%, and so forth. And based on the DPI of the device, based on whoever was running Photoshop that day, the levels never quite exactly matched up with what you would expect visually the 50%, 30% of the battery to be. So in KitKat, we also rolled out a new battery indicator that is drawn in paths and rectangles every time. So it is exactly precise, down to the pixel, matching the amount of battery that you have left. So that process of investigating, oh, maybe we could remove some of these drawables, that's a lot of extra assets, actually gave us a better feature.
Nice. So speaking of notifications, that's something you worked on, right? The rich notification stuff.
Yes, that's right.
Is there anything that you want to talk to developers about there? Is any kind of like underused API, any common mistake you see, anything like that?
What a bully pulpit this is. We've actually been really pleased that the uptake on rich notifications was swift and very satisfying. I mean, people saw this, they were immediately, app developers were like, I see how I can use this.
Yep.
And one of the ways that we were actually able to sell that story is that we had really good support from a lot of our Google apps when we launched it. One of the things that the System UI team does is that we sneak behind, not enemy lines exactly, I guess this is trespassing? No, we swoop in the middle of the night into other apps in Google and implement support for the features that we're creating and then pitch them to the other teams. Say, oh, by the way, we just created this new sort of ambient mode screensaver framework called Daydream, and we wrote one for you, Currents team. Here, take a look at it and see what you think. And often the response is, oh, that's amazing. Sure, we'll take that patch. Or in the case of things like, you know, G+, or one of the things that we worked on recently is increasing support for keeping notifications in sync across multiple devices.
Yes.
And we actually helped out the calendar team doing a bunch of that implementation as well, so that those calendar notifications, when you say, I'm not going to that meeting, that notification disappears across multiple devices. We actually submitted those patches as well. So we were able to provide, when rich notifications came out, that kind of robust support that created an example of like, oh, I see exactly where I would use that. You know, that big picture notification is perfect for showcasing, you know, the lead image on this news story, or that, you know, that pair of shoes I'm going to pin or something.
And I guess actually having real use cases helps drive and make sure the API is sufficient for what you want to achieve as well.
We can't build APIs without customers. Right. We couldn't build an OS if we didn't build, we didn't have, you know, devices around to test it on. We can't build APIs if we don't have app customers to not just shake out the bugs, but establish places where we really need to think harder about what it is that we want to offer, what it is we want to build into the future. And so
I have worked at other places where we had APIs without customers, so I have living proof that it's possible to do that, at least for a little
while.
Wait,
did you do well?
It didn't end well, but it's possible to do it.
Are you sure it didn't end well? Are you sure you're not still working at that other company? Can I see your badge? So when we brought up rich notifications, yeah, the uptake was really really swift on a lot of those, you know, the built-in templates. And incidentally, a note about the templates, we call them notification styles. But really, it's syntactic sugar in the API so that you can get things that look like the rich system platform provided notification. They look great on the platform without having to do a ton of code to build up your own layouts. We have three of those in the platform right now. One that is called Big Text, where you just, if you wanted to have a text message and just show all of the text, you just have a larger block of it. You know, it's basically big texting. Similarly, big picture is a big image view in the background of the notification. And then inbox style was something that we built specifically for mail clients, where you wanted to show sort of a bulleted list of a few things. You might say, well, I've got this other use case. And we had other use cases too. We worked really hard to sort of whittle this down to what are the most essential things that most apps we think can use with the least amount of code and get, you know, a huge response from. And by and large, I think that you see that in the wild, in the Play Store, most apps that use rich notifications use one of those templates. Those that don't are trying to do something really different. You know, a common example is a music player. We don't have a special template for music players with the playback controls, right. Which incidentally we introduced all the way back in Honeycomb, the ability to have individually targetable areas within a notification.
But did you at least show them how to draw a rectangle graphic? Because I see that for the stop button, they actually have a nice solid square.
That's true.
Yeah, did that come from?
It's not a little bit. It's not a little bit rotated or right. Hand drawn or anything like
perfect.
That. You got to watch out for that hand drawn stuff. So you see things like music players that have the custom remote views, or for example, apps that provide sort of notification widgets, which a lot of people do enjoy, like for weather. If you want to see a weather, you know, the temperature icon in your status bar, and then you pull it down, you get a nice, you know, beautiful like. You know, picture of the clouds that are the same as the clouds outside your window, you know, that's something where you build a custom remote views. That's not a template that we provide, because this is already in the realm of, like, you want to do something special with your app, that's great. You have the tools to do it. You always have this escape hatch of specifying the content view directly, and you can specify the big content view, too, for the expanded form.
And if I'm trying to target, you know, older, if I'm in SDK is 8 or 9, for example, mm-hmm. What's the story then with notifications? Is there some sort of support library wrapper?
There is. It's called Notification Compat. And what's great about Notification Compat is it provides the new programming interface as well, the new sort of fluent programming builder style API for creating notifications. which will fail gracefully, degrade gracefully on Gingerbread and Froyo. I believe it's a V4 support library. And you'll get basically just the standard, we call it the 1U internally notification, the sort of standard height of notification, if you imagine like a rack of servers, right? There's 1U that is the notifications that you see in their collapsed state, sort of conventional thing that we had on Gingerbread. And then they expand to a larger form. So you'll degrade gracefully with that. And we, as new features come into notification, we'll add them to compat as well so that they can, again, degrade gracefully onto earlier versions of the platform.
Cool.
So we've talked a lot about notifications. I was actually planning on bringing up all kinds of other stuff, but we've been going on for a while. So I'm thinking there's probably a follow-up show at some point. But I did want to mention briefly.
Before the feedback comes
in. This is the teaser to get people just hanging out. Oh my gosh, I can't wait until Dr. Dan is on another show. markers and logos. I wanted to ask about markers, but I mean, these are sort of deep topics.
No, that's a different thing. Go on.
So you wrote this app called Markers.
I did.
Which is awesome. It's a nice little finger sketching program that you have been...
You can sketch other things besides fingers. I don't know if you know that.
Not me. Anything it's all I can mind. Draw.
It's just
all
fingers. You just put your hand down and trace it.
Pretty much I draw turkeys.
You
draw...
Thanks you must have children.
Over and over and over again.
Writing markers was, initially something that I... the idea occurred to me when I discovered that we had pressure APIs in Android. I said, well, hey, we've got this stuff. I believe it was added... when did that come in? Eclair? I think Eclair. So, well, we've got multi-touch APIs and pressure APIs. I wonder if this data has actually been populated by anything. And to my surprise, indeed, even back then on the Nexus One and the Droid, we were getting pressure information from the touch panel. So the touch panel, hardware engineer, but essentially the way these capacitive panels work is that they have a lot of sensors and they kind of know where your finger is based on an aggregate response from these sensors. And so they kind of, they pick a spot and they tell the OS, hey, here's where the finger is, but they also provide a bunch of additional and here's the strength with which I detected it or kind of the approximate size and what have you. And we, on Android, plumb all of that all the way up to the app. And I said, well, we could totally use that. We could allow you to do real sort of, pressure sensitive in its way, finger painting on the glass without requiring an active stylus. So I built markers to test it out. I specifically built it to be toddler compatible because at the time I had, I guess he was one and a half, 2 years old. I had a toddler at home. And so one of the features from markers from the beginning is that if you put two fingers down, it paints in two places as opposed to doing a zoom. Because I don't know if you've seen little kids try to hold touchscreen devices, but they, hold it with one side and, mash their thumb on that side and then try to touch the other side and wonder why it's broken. So markers specifically does multi-paint for that reason alone, that you don't need to really be very careful about how you hold it to get something to show up on the screen.
Is that where the slogan came from? Markers, the sketching app for dumber people.
That was when you started using it. It's too easy. I will cut this out. So what ended up happening with markers, though, is that I built it to test these APIs. My kids loved it. And it slowly became a way for me to do what I think the Android framework engineers don't often get a chance to do, which is sit on the other side.
Yep,
build an app, use the tools, which are awesome, by the way. I'm making a really obsequious gesture toward Tor.
He's totally sucking up to Tor.
That's right. Deal with the uploading the Android market, and then it became the Play Store and the developer console and so forth, to go through that entire cycle, getting feedback from the public, which is sometimes delightful. Actually, mostly it is really delightful. It's really a thrill to be able to, anybody listening to this podcast, I'm sure, has built an app or at least, run some sample code. But if you haven't had the chance to put something up under your own name on the Play Store, it's a great experience. It feels awesome to be able to build that and then get feedback about an app and push updates and have it be out there on people's devices, nearly immediately. And I will say that this is one of the great things about working at Google. Google has a process by which you can say, I want to make some open source code and release it to the world. And Google looks at it and says, oh, and has the opportunity to say, well, actually, this is really kind of cool. Maybe we should build this into a product. But in the case of markers, they said, oh, this is great sample code. This teaches people how to use multi-touch APIs. It's a fun little demo app. Go nuts. And so that's why Markers is not only open source, so anybody can take it and integrate that code into other projects or product demos or major launches of capacitive sensing stylus hardware. But you can also go and just get the app and play with it. And that's something that I've never had before working.
You can insert malware and upload it as your own app as well.
Very briefly. And then the platform anti-malware team will boot it out of the Play Store.
Go see our previous podcast with Adrian Ludwig.
That's right. Oh, nice callback.
Well done. I should go listen to that one.
You what?
I mean,
he means re-listen to it.
That's right. I put it on repeat. It'll kick out the Frozen soundtrack. I'll just put this on repeat instead. Hi, kids.
Okay, so that's Market. That was pretty brief, actually. I thought we could actually spend a whole show on it. But so now you don't have to come back. The other aspect that I thought was interesting is completely different. You're actually a really good cartoonist, and you end up doing... Do you do any of the official logos? I think the Honeycomb one was like... It was an unofficial logo that sort of...
Became official, yeah.
That's my favorite Android t-shirt. It's the Honeycomb
one. It's the
bee.
It's the blue...
That's right.
Droid thing.
Which when I showed it to my daughter and she was too, she said, "Daddy, bees are not blue." I said, yes, no, that's true.
It was because it was the system UI alternate white color, right?
She was really upset.
This bee is actually connected to Google services back end right now.
Well, Honeycomb is when we introduced the Holo blue, right?
That's right.
So it was sort of a blue release.
That's right. It was our blue period, if you will.
Yes.
Which we are now coming out of. I don't know what we're going to call this period in hindsight. The Honeycomb logo, it's one of the things I'm proudest of because it kind of took on a life of its own. You know, I put it in. So one of the other things that System UI team is involved in is the platform Easter eggs. The first platform logo Easter egg was put in by Diane and Gingerbread, and I sort of took that over after that and have been sprinkling little things in there for those who are willing to tap repeatedly in settings. Tap and long press and, you know, turn around and spit and whatever you have to do to get into the Easter egg. So we put I was just doodling with, you know, Android logos for Honeycomb, threw that into the platform logo in the system. One thing led to another, and somebody put it on the press invite for the Honeycomb launch, and that was it. And that was history. And you've seen that the logo is now, somebody had a...
Did someone make a
costume? Okay. It was a costume that somebody, maybe that was, I'm trying to remember which company it was, that used that as a costume dancing around. I remember having seen it in a keynote slide, about which I will say no more. And I have at home a delightful, car charger. Made by the Andrew guys that is shaped like a little tiny Android Honeycomb, the BOS logo, BEEOS, which has really stuck around.
Yay.
I don't think that I can claim credit for really any of the other official logos.
You do a
lot
of internal ones.
That's true.
I've seen other
That's
things
true.
Being
Some of them,
tossed around.
Yeah, best kept internal.
They'll stay internal. But
if you pick apart the source code, you can find.
Are there any other things we should probably close out for now, but anything else you want to mention about your childhood?
No.
Can you tell me about your mother? So we like to take this show in a new direction every time.
Right.
Anything else you'd like to say?
This has been a lot of fun. I hope this is useful. We didn't really come in here with much of a plan. I don't know if you can tell that we were winging this, but you know, I think we hit upon a lot of stuff. There's other things to talk about. We have the Android Developers Blog, where when we introduce new things like the rich notifications and Daydream and whatever, we've, you know, written, you know, posts sort of explaining where to go and when you might want to use this. But some of these things like, you know, Notification Listener, they just kind of, you know, we put it out there, kind of see what we could do with it. And people have really run with it, but we haven't necessarily had an opportunity to talk about it in a more robust way. So maybe we can come back and sort of dig into some of those features, you know, one by one as, you know, as time warrants.
We'll see what the feedback is on the episode. We'll get back to you on that.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably good. We should do this more in general, like actually have show notes and say where to get information. You gave part of a talk at Google I/O 2012, mm-hmm. specifically on expanded notifications.
That's right.
So if you want more information about those APIs and how to use them, you should definitely check out that talk, or at least your part of it. And then some of the newer stuff, like where would they go? Were there articles on any of the... other stuff that came out in KitKat?
The KitKat stuff, I don't think we had articles exactly about...
So it's just SDK references.
SDK references, and then, you know, a couple of, you know, explanatory Google Plus posts here and there, talking about things like immersive mode, which we didn't even talk about, immersive mode, which is a gift to, you know, games that are right now have no way to, no easy way to avoid you hitting the home button by mistake. Immersive mode is a great way to deal with that.
Now we have talked about it.
And we have talked about it. Covered, done, check the box. Okay. Yeah, a lot of it's just in the SDK. But we should do this more often. We'll have to figure out a way to do it remotely. Right now I'm with you guys here in the luxuriously appointed Android Developers Backstage Studio in Mountain View,
snowy California.
That's right, non-snowy California. But I am most of my time in very snowy Cambridge, the Google Cambridge office. We'll have to figure out a way to make this scale across sites.
I didn't know we had an office in England. That's
we do have an office. Well, you can tell. It's called the London office. I'm going to tell you.
Exactly.
You
I mean, Cambridge, Cambridge, England.
No, no. Cambridge, yeah, Mass.
Oh, I see.
The other Cambridge.
All right then. So on that very climactic moment, let's close up. All right. Thanks for coming.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.